Blog Talk Radio.
The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Good evening, and welcome to the Green Egg Radio Hour. This is your host, Ariel Montserrat.
And I'm Sylvie Salou.
And good evening. Our special guest tonight is Christopher Blackwell, publisher of ACTION, the Journal of ARIN, which stands for Alternative Religions Educational Network. Here is what he says about himself in his own words.
Born in November of 1945. I am so sorry I didn't mean to make you older than you are, Christopher. Born in November of 1945, I am just a bit too old to be a baby boomer. I was raised in a pretty standard dysfunctional family of the time that was nothing like those TV family sitcoms where problems were worked out in an hour by a family with love, mutual respect, and cooperation. I won an all-expense-paid vacation to exotic Vietnam, courtesy of the United States Marine Corps. The accommodations were terrible, the food was lousy, and the natives were not particularly friendly. But what can you expect for free? So I am a disabled Marine, Vietnam War veteran, who is a fairly typical bipolar person.
Mm-hmm. By today's standards, I was raised as what today would be called a religious nun. That's N-O-N-E, not N-U-E. N-U-N. My first religion would be a Japanese form of evangelical Buddhism called Nichiren Shoshu. I hope I pronounced that right. Which I went to meetings 7 days a week for 5 years. Then I left L.A. to become an agate miner with my partner and spent much of it living in a 1968 VW bus with a 1,000 Thunder Eggs under the bed mining equipment, a rock saw, grinding and polishing equipment over the engine compartment. Wow, and on the bed with my stuff was my partner's stuff, the cat stuff, and a case of 40% nitrodynamite. My kind of guy. The bus was covered over with my partner's hand-drawn posters, and we rarely stayed in one place more than 2 weeks. Nevertheless, I started building stone altars to Pan, went to pagan gatherings in northern New Mexico, and became a Wiccan using The Spiral Dance, a book by Starhawk on Samhain of 1984. I was trained and initiated in the Alexandrian tradition in Tucson, Arizona, by Yule of 1984, mainly because we got stuck in the flea market from hell for several months. You've had an interesting life there, Christopher.
He says further, I contacted some Wiccans by letter, and the first letter was barely 1.5 pages long, but soon grew 10 to 20 pages, and at one time there were 40 friends. This, along with writing one-page articles for a variety of pagan newsletters, taught me how to write. I was asked, while part of an alternative religion educational network, to launch a newsletter. Completely unaware of what I was getting into, I launched a 10-page newsletter on Samhain in 2004 with 8 issues a year, one going out each Sabbath. I started with what was happening with ARIN, but soon branched into research articles. When I grew too old and didn't have the energy, I switched to the present interview format, which proved to be more popular, and we have over 2,000 readers here in the United States, Western and Eastern Europe, South Africa, and Australia. I interview pagans, heathens, druids, ceremonial magicians, and Wiccans in these areas, while friends and readers suggest who I should interview in these same parts of the world. There have been times when it seemed like too much to continue, so I asked the goddess and the god to give me inspiration or a kick in the butt, whichever might prove more useful. So far, they have never let me down, and I am still at it.
And with that, welcome, Christopher.
Well, thank you very much.
You've had a You've had a really interesting life. I really enjoyed corresponding with you.
Well, primarily because I just don't fit in. Whenever I try to fit in, I get into trouble. And when I got back from Vietnam, for example, I lasted on most jobs about 3 months, you know, and then I was getting too odd. Whereas working in my my shop now, I become that colorful character they met on their Southwestern vacation.
So you might find yourself on a postcard somewhere in Rite Aid one of these days, huh?
Oh, I have a lot of odd pictures that have been taken of me, too.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. I like the 40 pounds of nitroglycerin that were...
Oh, yeah, with the 40% nitroglycerin, we'd have an entire case of it. And by the way, that was 1,000 pounds of Thunder Eggs, not 1,000 Thunder Eggs, and sometimes as much as 1,500 pounds. You know what the difference is between the two?
No.
Okay, 1,000 pounds of Thunder Eggs means that your suspension is a bit sluggish. At 1,500 pounds, every time you hit a bump, you hit the wheel well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Might I ask what you ended up doing with this?
Well, then we would cut and polish them and sell them at various shows, and of course that's what my shop does now. But as far as the Volkswagen bus, we buried it at the mine. It deserved it after 20 years.
Wow. Yeah.
And five engines.
And five engines.
Wow.
Always the number three valve burned out.
So how did you, amongst all of these adventures, how did you become Wiccan?
Well, I mentioned before, I started off really with no religious background at all. It was only after my parents died that I found out they were Episcopalian, and but they'd never shown any sign of anything. Mm-hmm. And when I went to Vietnam, one of the places I was stationed was a rather upscale graveyard. We were stationed there for the same reason the Viet Cong were stationed in such places, because nobody would blow them up. And one of the areas nearby was a very decorative tomb of an obviously well-off person. And it was one of the places I used to sit and meditate. And that, in turn, when I got back, sort of led me into being run into by these evangelical Buddhists from Nichiren Shoshu.
Mm-hmm.
And as I expressed, they would literally go out on the street and pick people up and bring them to the meeting and have up to three meetings, and then go to a general chapter meeting, and then go to chapter meeting, then general chapter meeting. If we had time, we'd go to Santa Monica and pick up at the headquarters too. And
wow.
we used to get Marines by guaranteeing we'd get them back to base before curfew hit. And we didn't think anything of driving a 300-mile round trip in broken-down cars, because gasoline was only 32 cents a gallon.
Yeah. Right, yeah. That was a while ago, wasn't it? Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about the Buddhist group?
Nichiren Shoshu was based on the teachings of Nichiren Daishonin. And its Pinsley-here practice centers around chanting to the Gohonzon, which is a scroll that has basically the... some of the sutra on it, and it forms around the 1200s. It by the World War II version, since they would not connect with state Shintoism, they were harassed rather badly and had to literally be rebuilt the temples and everything. And a lay organization, which became known as the Soka Gakkai, became basically the breadwinners for them. And the group that we were seeing, that I was with, was basically with the regular members group. We weren't this is now be called the Soka Gakkai. And but when they after I left, there was a new head chief, a head priest, and apparently he didn't like the idea that the head of the common people was more popular than he was. So he
ancient story
got rid of them all. After they'd rebuilt the temple with multi-million-dollar temples.
Wow.
But it's basically their main thing is to try to improve one's life and to work for world peace, or is was one of their main things. But they were real hard charging people.
Mm-hmm.
I used to walk from Little Tokyo in downtown LA through East LA to get to the meetings each night. And East LA at that time was already the barrio and somewhat dangerous. It was a 2-hour walk each way. And
yeah.
So I'd go from 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock to get there, and then by the time we got done with all the meetings, I'd be walking back at 2 o'clock in the morning to 4 o'clock in the morning. And I did this 7 days a week.
Wow.
And ironically, never had any trouble. Never even
wow.
got yelled at.
Yeah.
Good thing, because I can't fight.
And yet you were a Marine.
Yes, I was. I was the most reluctant warrior you ever saw. I automatically assumed I was going to get killed in Vietnam.
Oh, my goodness.
That's a heck of an adventure. Jeez.
Well, I did have much belief in my ability to survive. You know, I was a very fragile person, I thought, you know, and so it's always kind of funny to look back and see the things I have survived since.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't find strength until you're forced to find it.
Yeah, true. Well, tell me, Christopher, how did you begin doing the writing that you do?
Well, it started basically from the letter writing. My problem was with me moving around all the time. I had no, and unusually in the backcountry, I had absolutely no way of connecting with the pagan movement at all. I had gotten hooked up with the Circle Sanctuary through their Circle Network News, which was a quarterly deal, and that was just about my only tie-in until I later ran into the Green Egg. So these were my two tie-ins to the pagan world. And through them, I began to notice letters to the editors that from people that were interesting, and I began to send out letters to those people to try to set up letter friends. About 50% of them would answer back. And then bit by bit, I built up. I'd had people in this country, people in Europe, people in South Africa, and what have you. So this is all pre-internet. So, you know, like South Africa, you waited two weeks to go there and 2 weeks for the letter to come back to find out if you'd made contact.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, my first writing to a South African pagan newsletter, that's exactly what I'd have to wait. I'd wait a full month to find out if my article made it.
Oh. There, you know, there are many, many people that's how they connected to other pagans, was through Green Egg and the forum and the ads.
Oh, especially the forum. Oh, boy, the arguments we had there.
Oh, boy. Those really are legendary. And unfortunately, everybody's on Facebook now, and we don't have a whole lot of activity on our forum. But yeah,
not yet, we don't.
Ladies Vetlana, it will go down in infamy.
Well, the arguments got to be really big, you know. Anybody that got the idea that pagans were all gentle, loving people didn't get into the arguments that we got into.
Yeah, they forget that Vikings were pagans, too. Some of those are dedicated to Sekhmet or Mars or somebody.
Well, there's also the ones that remember, I'm Alexandrian, and Alexandrians get into an argument over who can call themselves Wiccan, something I've never gotten into. But remember that the Alexandrians, in turn, used to be argued about the Guardians as saying that they weren't really Wiccan.
Oh yeah, right.
Yeah, but now we and the Guardians are protecting ourselves from all of the others.
it kind of sounds like the arguments about, you know, is Mormonism really Christian or not? You know?
Oh, exactly. And the thing is that Wicca, like anything else, any other religion, is changing rapidly. I was talking to one guy that got a deal with an evangelical Christian, and they write back and forth and try to examine their religions. And the evangelical was saying, you know, Wicca has changed so much, changed more in 50 years than Christianity did in its first 200 years.
Yeah.
And part of that's the internet.
Yeah, yeah. And yet it's kind of strange to think of, paganism is the oldest religion, at least as far as we know. You know, and how strange that we would go through all of these changes rather than stick to tradition.
Well, we are doing the same thing. Remember, the pagan religions did not stay the same either.
Right.
The religion of the hunter-gatherers would be very little like the religion of the farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And then the religion of the city builders and the religions of the conquerors would vary drastically.
That's true.
And not to mention, it changed from tribe to tribe, people to people. So if you were in the Roman Empire and you did one god, well, how you did it in Rome might not be how you did it in Londonium.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Which might in turn then blended in with some of the local gods. So there was no standardized religion as we seem to think there is now. There really isn't now, because even Christianity has thousands of different varieties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Everything's I guess it's just like nature. Everything evolves.
Exactly. It has to. It either evolves or it dies.
Yeah. And the ancients did not have an internet, so of course it wouldn't have changed as rapidly.
Well, there's also another thing, except for state religions, the pagan religions didn't have an orthodoxy.
Right.
And the state religions, the only ones that really had an orthodoxy were those with the war-based gods, where you had to do it our way, or else. But in most cases, it really wasn't that important. So it was possible for individual believers to have completely different beliefs about it. And plus, you might not worship all the gods. You might just worship the gods. You might have certain gods for your own family. You might have a certain god or goddess that was important to your city. But you, out of all the many gods, each of you might worship different ones.
We had another guest on the old radio show who told it. I asked, how did monotheism get started? Because she was all about Egypt. And she said, well, you know, everybody had one god that everybody worshipped in tribe or country, whatever they called them then. But then each person also had their favorite gods that they also honored as well. And that's how monotheism came about, is what she said. And that certainly jives with what you're saying.
Well, remember, too, they also had that strange guy who decided to get rid of all the gods and just do Aton.
Yes.
They rather disliked him. It's probably the reason why he got killed. All these other temples were losing money on the deal.
Right.
And power.
You know, I'm thinking maybe another factor in the rapid change of Wiccanism in the last 50 years is that as we have grown, we've gotten more people who do research to try to recover what was in the past. And as we fill in those blanks, it's going to be changing. I don't know. What do you think about that?
It's going to change even more as the second and third generation pagans take over. Remember, for us first generation, this is something new and odd. And we carry over a certain amount of baggage from our old religions.
Exactly.
You know, I might consider myself a Buddhist Wiccan. You know, I probably still have some leftover ideas for Buddhism. But the second and third generation, this is their norm.
Mm-hmm.
And where they go from there may change drastically. And pretty soon you'll have us people back here say, but that wasn't the way I was taught it.
Right, exactly. Us old dinosaurs creeping around. Well, that brings to mind the article that you pointed me to. And, by the way, we just got our new issue of Green Egg out, and it's up on the site now. And we included an article called Polynormativity.
Mm-hmm.
And, Christopher, you're the one that brought that to my attention.
Sure.
And it was so exciting because it talks about doing polyamory in a much different way. And,
relationship, and you have a primary relationship and secondary relationships, and that makes more sense to people that are used to a primary relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do with what polyamory could be.
Yeah, right. And it's a whole different way. I was actually, my husband and I were both really excited to read that article. I think it's really thought-provoking. And it gives more choices to people that are polyamorous, you know, not to just do it one way.
No, there's no one way. Whatever works.
Yeah, but I'm glad to see that polyamory has been around long enough and enough people are doing it that it's now got new ideas coming in, and that's really great. It keeps it alive.
Well, yeah, also remember, too, it's also got some places where it's got very strict rules on how you should do this so you don't get in trouble.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you
some
know.
Some over-organized it.
We're talking about people that went through the 50s, you know. You know about this. Raised like
where you dare not buy different furniture than your neighbors, and you should drive the same kind of car and make sure that you have the same kind of job, because if you're a little bit different, you're suspicious.
Yeah, exactly. I live in a very small town in Tennessee, and that's exactly the rule here, you know, because everybody's known each other for hundreds of years, their family. You know?
If you're not third generation, we don't even talk to you.
Right. No, they've been very welcoming. Very welcoming here.
Well, that's changing too, because you're having more and more new people move into the smaller towns.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, like in my small town out here, the majority of people were lived somewhere else. So we're all outsiders.
Oh, that's pretty nice.
Yeah,
well,
and that changes
some
a bit
of them.
You can blend into the town a lot faster. It must be awful hard though for the old timers, the people who actually were born and raised here.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, if somebody will send some new ones my way,
Mm-hmm. I'm stuck in a dinosaur town. I am not kidding.
Oh, yeah.
In every way possible.
The scariest thing about small town living compared to big city, you can't get lost in a small town, and little things can become very emotional very quick.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, it's not the Shangri-La that people in the big city like to think it is.
No.
Wait, and it's not for everybody.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
You don't like people knowing everything about you. You definitely don't want to live in a small town.
Right, exactly.
This is one of the reasons why I'm 10 miles out of my town.
Well, that's a good idea.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, Don, do you have I think you have the next question.
Well, sure. How did you become an activist?
Well, that too was sort of by accident. What happened back in the 1980s under the religious right and moral majority and dear old Ronald Reagan, there was a bill about to be passed. The post office was still being funded by Congress in those days, and there was a bill to fund the post office. And Senator, I'm trying to think of his name now. My mind won't kick up the name. But anyway, a senator decided to add a little addition on there saying that no nonprofit organization that was related either to witchcraft or Satanism would be allowed to have the mass mailing rates that all other nonprofit organizations were allowed.
Oh, geez, I never knew about that.
Yeah, and Senator Jesse Helms.
Oh,
right in the midst of the power of the religious right, so it looked like a safe thing to put in because nobody could possibly be against it. Well, as it happened, it came right in the middle between two different copies of the Circle Network News. So Selena Fox, and there are a few other groups too, did a campaign of sending out postcards. I hate to think what it cost. And to get the information out, warn people what was happening, and tell them to write to the people on this committee. And this is, you know, before Internet, so we're all doing snail mail. And ironically, we were able to get enough letters. We're talking about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of letters suddenly show up that it killed the idea in committee. Now, if they had gotten onto the floor, it would have been almost impossible to kill because the moral majority was really very much in power. But we managed to convince them this was not a good idea.
Yeah.
So that was my first example that activism could actually work.
Yeah.
We were basically using the same technique that moral majority was. They did the same kind of campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, I was just one of a great many. And as I say, Selena Fox was one of the many people that was organizing it.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for all of your efforts towards that. Because,
yeah, me too.
You know, you early people, I didn't hit the scene till the mid-90s, but you earlier people really fought the fight. You had to, I don't know even how you did it.
Well, the thing was, it was kind of fun in its own way. Remember, we were a rebellious people. Being Wiccan in those days was being something really off the wall.
Mm-hmm.
It had to be secret. When we had gatherings, you had to call up somebody or write them, and they would send you instructions on how to get there because they didn't dare post where these gatherings were going to be. I can remember one time when we had a Catholic monastery just down the road, and they were warning us, don't tell anybody in town what you're going to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then we'd have 200 or 300 or people down there. And the one advantage was that we didn't have to do something to be careful that we didn't upset the outsiders. The problem of going public and doing all these things out in the public, you don't want to do anything that might upset the non-members.
Right.
So nudity is out.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of other things you might do are also out because this would upset them. And so I don't know that they have quite the freedom. I realize we need to let people see some of us and so they know that we're not really too weird. But at the same time, we're losing some of the aspects that made us pagan in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to see us continue with private ones as well as public ones. The public ones have their place, but we need a place where we can lay our hair down and just be pagan.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and I have found, you know, I grew up and lived all my life in California except for a few short times, and I was with the Church of All Worlds. Well, we had a big piece of land up in the mountains in the wilderness, and nobody could bother us, and that it was our church land, you know, so nobody could bother us. That's starting to change a bit, but I find that things are very different here in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
At all of the gatherings, even the private ones, you have to really keep a low profile, and if there's any children, well, you know, you have to be real careful, because you might endanger somebody.
You might endanger someone's family.
Yeah, Child Protective Services shows up, you know.
Yeah.
I hear you people were running around naked.
Yes, well, we did sometimes.
Yeah, we
did. Sometimes even the kids did.
Yeah.
And nobody thought twice of it. Those that wanted to did, those that didn't.
Right.
You know, and you actually didn't bother the kids. The people who would get bothered were usually either the parents or teenagers, who, of course, worried about how their bodies are developing.
Right, teenagers are, you know, another species.
Yeah, they're very sensitive about that. But the kids, no. Kids, nudity never bothered them, and people who grew up with nudity didn't worry about it. It's the funny thing is, when I went to beaches, I saw a lot less improper behavior in a nude beach than I ever did at a clothed beach.
I find that to be true. I find that kind of thing exactly to be true as well. So, do you want to tell us what ACTION is and when did it start? And also about Aaron, too.
Aaron started out in the last century, and it was Dr. Leo Martello formed what was then called the Witches Anti-Defamation League, and it was strictly for Wiccans at that time.
Right.
And that continued on to about the year 2000. By the year 2000, we found ourselves facing a different situation. One, there were more other groups. You know, we were beginning to see the Druids. We were beginning to see the heathens. And they would share some of the same problems. And we didn't want to be limited to just Wiccans. So then the group changed its name and became the Alternate Religion Educational Network. And that allowed us to include others. When I started with ACTION, the first little articles there were not. It was not much more than just an in-house newsletter talking about what we were doing. We had some things going on. We had one case that went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and it was kind of quite a raucous deal.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have quiet periods. This is the one thing with your civil rights organizations. If there's nothing big happening, it gets kind of dead.
Mm-hmm.
And so to fill in some space, I began to do some research. I would research things like there was a case of a Brazilian religion that came to the United States that was using hallucinogenic tea, and they were being harassed by the government, and their case went to the Supreme Court, and they got the right to use this during their ceremonies, very similar to as the American Indian Church got the use of their particular drug.
Yeah.
These are things that could possibly affect other pagans. And so it went. And then, of course, if something came up among the pagans, I'd put that in too. But then I began to realize that I was still talking mostly to witches. And that's when I started to start trying to interview heathens. And that took a little while because some of them don't have the best view of Wiccans sometimes. But I tried to let them see that I wasn't going to do anything silly with it. And then the Druids, and worked my way around to the other groups, and then gradually began to be recommended to some of the other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I depend very heavily on my friends, the people on the forums I go to, and the readers of ACTION to give me ideas of who would they like to see. And it doesn't always have to be a big-name pagan. Very often there are people working in the background who may be very, very important. And it's important to me because these ordinary people are the ones that are likely to do something that another ordinary person might look at and say, aha, I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
Where sometimes pagans get the idea, if I'm not an important person, I'm not knowledgeable enough, you know, I couldn't do anything. And to teach them the little things they could do. We had one case of a lady who was a professional storyteller that was giving time for the seasonal stories to tell to pagan people and pagan kids in Salt Lake City for free. This was how she served her religion with her ability.
Wow.
And very shortly after the article came out, there was another professional storyteller down in the South that got wrote in that, gee, I could do something like that. And that's exactly the idea. ACTION is about action. It's about people doing things and trying to encourage that, showing that you don't have to be anybody special. You don't have to have any special talents. You don't have to have any money. It's like me. I sit out here in the middle of the desert. I mean, I am literally 10 miles from town on a 5-mile highway in the middle of nowhere. And yet I have always been one way or the other active with the community, despite the fact that I have no nearby pagans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's basically what we do, too. We do Green Egg, and, you know, thanks to the Internet, we can be in contact with anybody all over the world.
You know, like the person that's my web guy is in Florida.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I used to have a person that helped me with editing that was in Oakland, California.
Mm-hmm.
These kind of organizations are possible because of the Internet.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And fortunately, we pagans were very quick to realize the value of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, right now we need to take a little break, and we've got a song to play for you, and so we'll go there, and then we'll be right back. And I also want to invite our listeners to call in to the show and comment with questions or comments, and that number is 718-664-6436, and we'll see you right after the music.
I love this guy.
With the arms of the Great Mother ever surround me, with the arms of the Great Mother ever surround me, I invoke the protection of Divine Mother's embrace. I invoke the protection of Divine Mother's grace. With the arms of the Great Mother ever surround me. With the arms of the Great Mother ever surround me. I invoke the protection of Divine Mother's embrace. I invoke the protection of Divine Mother's grace. With the arms of the Great Mother ever surround me. The arms of the Great Mother ever surround me. I invoke the protection of Divine Mother's embrace. I invoke the protection of Divine Mother's grace. The arms of the Great Mother ever surround me. The arms of the Great Mother ever surround me. I invoke the protection of Divine Mother's embrace. I invoke the protection of Divine Mother's grace. The arms of the Great Mother ever surround me. The arms of the Great Mother ever surround me. I invoke the protection of Divine Mother's embrace. I invoke the protection of Divine Mother's grace. The arms of the Great Mother ever surround me. The arms of the Great Mother ever surround me. I invoke the protection of Divine Mother's embrace. I invoke the protection of Divine Mother's grace. With the arms of the Great Mother ever surround me. With the arms of the Great Mother ever surround me. I invoke the protection of Divine Mother's embrace. I invoke the protection of Divine Mother's grace. With the arms of the Great Mother ever surround me. With the arms of the Great Mother ever surround me. I invoke the protection of Divine Mother's embrace. I invoke the protection of Divine Mother's grace. The arms of the Great Mother ever surround me. The arms of the Great Mother ever surround me. I invoke the protection of Divine Mother's embrace. I invoke the protection of Divine Mother's grace. The arms of the Great Mother ever surround me. The arms of the Great Mother ever surround me. I invoke the protection of Divine Mother's embrace. I invoke the protection of Divine Mother's grace. The arms of the Great Mother ever surround me. The arms of the Great Mother ever surround me.
And that was Lisa Thiel with the protection chant.
Oh, that was beautiful. It's really beautiful.
Well, Christopher, one question I'd like to ask you is, why do you keep in touch with so many different communities?
I think there is a danger in our pagan world of becoming isolated just to our own religion and just to our own locality. And this leaves us wide open for surprises because we don't know something's coming. give you an extreme example. I'm working with the South African Pagan Rights Alliance on a problem they're having of witch hunts. And I'm talking about the old kind of witch hunts where people are blaming their bad luck on their neighbors and then killing them or beating them, torturing them, or burning them out and forcing them to flee. And so this is a serious problem in Africa. You're talking about probably thousands of people being killed and tens of thousands of people being tortured and thrown out of their homes, living in some cases in witch camps, which are basically like little concentration camps where they have to work hard to, just to be allowed to stay there, but they're never able to go back. It turns out that, among other things, that some of the people pushing this are some evangelical ministries that are making good money on accusing people of being witches and then offering a cure for about a year's salary.
Yeah, I've been following that very closely.
Considering that those groups are financed by groups we have in this country, I'm left to wonder, are they trying out things over there that they want to see if they could possibly pull here? We are in bad times right now.
Yeah.
And when you have bad times, there's a push for scapegoats.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's
so in
what
working
I've been...
on the problem over there, I may help prevent it here. The local pagans are working on it because there's a danger to them. Right now, the people believe the only people who can conduct be witches are black people.
Uh-huh.
But somewhere down the line, that may cross the line.
Yeah.
So they see a personal danger. The other thing is, if I see a problem in another group, let's say the heathens, and they come up with a solution, we can borrow that solution and not have to reinvent the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to make everybody the same. That's one thing some of the other groups get afraid of when we Wiccans get involved. They're afraid we're going to homogenize them. No, that's not necessary. I can work with people I totally disagree with, and they don't have to agree with me, if we have a common interest.
Exactly.
By connecting between the various groups and making sure that we know what's happening in each group, that keeps us from having misunderstandings and fights between ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's a brilliant strategy, and I really wish more people would think about that.
Yeah, I do too, because I find a lot of people have it so solid in their mind. They think that the United States Constitution is going to protect every person in this country, no matter what. But it is, of course, as you know, Ariel,
it hasn't done that through much of our history.
Right.
Take it over some of the blacks and the Indians and all the various people who came in as new people.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Just today, actually, my husband and I were talking about scapegoating and when things hit the fan and trying, you know, who will be the first groups. Well, probably Muslims, because there's a lot of hatred going on towards them today,
mm-hmm.
but also pagans and gays, the usual suspect.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that you bring up the idea of, are they test driving, so to speak, a model of how to deal with witches and pagans in Uganda? Because, as I'm sure you both know, in Uganda, they're trying to get a bill passed that's the Kill the Gays bill, so they can go out and kill gays. Well, the other thing, the Pope just resigned, and
mm-hmm.
the number I've read that the number one guy they have in mind is totally for that policy.
Oh, boy.
There's also a deal where the Catholics have been pushing against all native religions. You know, he went and talked to people in voodoo in Africa when he was in their country. So, yeah, there is that problem. By the way, the anti-gay bill, it was a person from the United States that went there and told all the people in meeting after meeting after meeting that the gays were setting up gay tourism to use your children. That was how they pushed this bill. So, I do wonder if they're trying out tactics in the third world that they might hope to use here.
Yeah.
Plus, I'm telling my religion that we're all connected. What happens to the person over there could happen to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could. And as far as I can tell, I mean, I've been watching this for years, as has Ariel, but the way our government's going at this point in time with it's a lot of people call them teabaggers, you know. Laws are being passed to set this up.
you know, it's starting with women, you know, because mainly women
are... Well, we know we've got to keep the women under control.
Of course.
We allow them to do what they think's right. Mm-hmm. They might disagree with us.
Yeah, well, this is why I was really thrilled with the election in last November, because the five guys that were running around with his idiotic theories about rape and women and pregnancy got soundly defeated, and we voted in a lot of gays, our first lesbian in the Senate, and even a transgendered congresswoman in somewhere up in the northern, one of the northern states.
Well,
and
this
I thought,
one of the things that people have to learn about these other groups, that they're basically just other human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And anyway, so getting on to a topic that's sensitive for all of us baby boomers, what is your take, Christopher, on getting older?
Well, it was kind of interesting. I went through some very serious health problems in my late 40s. I came out with pancreatitis. And I spent a year and went through three hospitals, a nursing home, and it was about 3 years later before I was able to make appointments for the next week. But in the process, I learned some valuable lessons. One, I developed my first sense of humor, not for me, but for the poor people who are sticking needles in me who are having trouble with my veins. They sometimes have as many as six different blood tests in a matter of 2 hours, and I'd look up at them and say, you can't tell me that's all for blood tests. You've got to have pet vampires up there. You know, they were scared because my veins were coming down. The other thing was, things got so incredibly bad that I began to notice the smallest of good things. I mean, a little thing like, I ate breakfast today and did upchuck was suddenly a big thing. You know, or the first time I was able to get by without having a tube down my throat.
Yeah.
And that comes in very, very handy. I also learned how to deal with the fact that I don't have control over some big things that hit me, and which for a middle-aged man at the time, you can imagine what that was like.
Yeah, really.
But those are all useful tools to dealing with getting older. And, yeah, I have my limitations. I've got a walker out here I have to use when I'm outside. My sense of balance leaves a lot. I've had five operations on my right eye. I can't read with it anymore. But, of course, the fact that I can even see out of it, considering I was blind twice with it, you know, it gives you a different sense of importance. It's amazing how many little things that were so important and bothered me aren't anymore. And I've learned to find a lot of good in just everything that happens. I find myself laughing a lot more, and it makes getting older a hell of a lot easier.
It does, doesn't it? It really does.
I even make jokes out of it. I have some of the most horrible walker jokes you've ever heard.
Yeah. How long have you had the walker, if I may?
Oh, I guess about 3 or 4 years now. It started with my first of my eye operations. I took a really bad fall. The nurse said, you know, you probably should get something, because if you break a hip, you may be crippled and in a wheelchair.
Oh, geez.
And I didn't like it. Nobody likes a walker. But at the same time, I didn't like a wheelchair even more.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention, my shop, I don't have room for a wheelchair. I got to keep myself vertical. It keeps me vertical, it keeps me in a wheelchair. I can still do 2 miles, 4 miles, depending on which walker I use. I have two of them.
Oh, you're a two-walker family. Okay.
Exactly, yes. I have the walking walker with no wheels that I use in the rough countryside around here, and it's also convenient because you fold up and put in the shopping cart and then act like you're a normal person.
Or as normal as you can act.
Yeah, the other one is designed in Sweden, quite sleek. Made in Mexico. This shows you how times have changed. Being made in Mexico is a good thing now.
Yeah.
And I tell the boys at the supermarket that this is the one it has 8.5-inch wheels. This is the one I chase women with. Well, I point out the difficulty with a walker is you can't run. You know, so you have to use a little different technique. So I saddle up to a likely-looking lady and say, hey, babe, you want to go for a ride in my walker?
Are you terrorizing the women of your area?
Of course, well, I better make sure she really wants to go. She's also in a position to do me some harm. I think I've almost got the boys
to go grocery shopping
with.
Oh, mercy. Well, Christopher, tell me, how do you see the future of paganism or heathenism and the like turning out?
To what?
How do you see the future of paganism or heathenism?
I worry a little bit. It is changing, and it's going to, I mean, especially us Wiccans, we're going to go in every single direction. You're going to see everything from Wiccan churches. In fact, I've seen, I had one lady I interviewed, she has ceremonies out in the park, which she makes look just as much like church ceremony as possible. That scares me. I don't want the process of becoming acceptable for us to become just like the other religions. We've always been a little bit on the rebellious side. I want to hold on to that. I want people to be able to go off in their different directions. But at the same time, I also want to keep the conversation going between all the various different groups so that we don't get isolated. I don't think we're big enough that we can afford to be isolated at this stage of the game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, are you saying that from your point of view, it looks like some of the pagan paths, beliefs, and the such are sort of Christianized?
There's a lot of that, but it's not surprising. Remember, most of our members are still ex-Christians. So change religions, you do not necessarily change how you treat religion or how you act with religion. As they say, second and third generation, this probably will not be a problem. And then we'll be complaining about, as I say, that's not the way we were taught.
We had a guest on a while back that talked about Christo-pagans, and he felt that that it was kind of muddying the waters to be both Christian and pagan because they've historically been been at odds with each other, you know, and I thought that was an interesting point of view.
But at the same time, you're going to see a lot more connections between religions. We're going to see a lot more things of a little bit of this and a little bit of that. The people are beginning to back away from the institutionalized religion, and so they you might have a person who's a Christian but does yoga,
you know,
and finds it very useful. And still another person does it. Look at the thing about the Larabith, how popular those have become in some of the churches where they walk the Larabith.
Right.
You know, so you're going to see blends, and we're not going to be able to stop that. That's going to happen, and maybe it needs to happen. But that means that the rest of us have to decide what we want our particular practice to be. In the process, we must not fall into the mistake of bashing the Christians. Because if you do that, we may not be paying attention to us starting to do exactly the same thing as we're complaining about.
Yeah.
Our job is to keep our practice without those mistakes. That's the danger of a relatively new religion, because we're the new guys now again, is the fact that in the process of developing that we may fall through in the exact same mistakes that every other religion has.
Yeah, and I see a lot of that.
If we're going to make mistakes,
let's make
unique mistakes. Let's not make old ones.
Yeah.
That's one reason why I'll probably always be a solitary. I'm not comfortable with groups because of group politics, and I'm just not good at that. So I'll probably always be a solitary. I'm never going to be a high priest. My education ended at initiation, and I've never found another member of my tradition. I understand that there's a lot of them in Connecticut, but I just don't think I'm going to be getting to Connecticut anytime soon. But then I don't need to be a high priest. We don't need lots of people calling themselves high priest. What we do need is qualified ones.
Yeah.
Because I'm only trained to initiation, I don't have the temptation to pretend that I know more than I do. And I'm not going to go out and tell people I'm a high priest and then lead them on into all kinds of chaos. So we need, the ones we have need to be well-trained ones and good ones.
And then we need
good students. When you're going to study a religion, you really should follow directions until you've learned enough about it to go off on your own. And that's what burns out so many teachers and why many of them just give up after a while.
One thing I see, especially on the social networks like Facebook, you've got a lot of people that are claiming, like what you're talking about, the high priestess thing, and they are so arrogant. And for someone like me who has, you know, I'm a lifelong witch. You know, I'm not Wiccan. I'm just your average country witch. But I see things coming out of their mouths and that are so ridiculous. I mean, I have to explain ridiculous. I mean, it is to the point where you look at it and you know beyond a shadow of doubt that what they're telling you is utter crap.
Yep.
No matter how old you are, no matter how new you are.
Well, in Wicca, too, The idea is that we're supposed to be a circle of equals. Yes, we have people who know more, and we respect them for their knowledge. But if the high priest starts playing the high mucky-muck, it is the duty of the members to depose her.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because the idea is supposed to be that you train everybody in the coven to do as much as they can, so if the high priest disappears someday, the coven can still function. Or you can set up another coven if need be.
Yeah.
And so you're always trying, if you're a teacher, your job is to make sure that your people know everything you do and then some.
Mm-hmm.
You want them to be better than you are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you are doing that, you're not a teacher. Then you're just doing an ego trip.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, ego trip. That's what I was thinking of and couldn't find the word.
And unfortunately, we also have people who want to be followers and follow the great leader. Those people will never make good Wiccans.
Yeah, this brings back the same thing that's been around for ages. You know, you've got the followers and no one, people that don't want to think things out.
No, they want to be told what to do.
Yeah.
Right.
Here's the surefire way to reach nirvana.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll do it for you. I am the leader. I know what to do. Just follow what I tell you. Unfortunately, that doesn't work because everybody has their own reason for doing things, and you don't. If you don't know what their reason for doing is, you could be led very far astray.
Oh, yeah.
And we see cults come up then.
And one size doesn't fit all. Not everybody's at the same place spiritually.
I'm interviewing a heathen right now, and she started by way of Wicca. And one of the things that bothered her in Wicca is that Wiccans seem to get worried about things that she considered unimportant. For instance, they worry about what direction they move. She says as a heathen, she doesn't worry about which way that the horn goes around. This is of no importance, but it's extreme importance to some Wiccans, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of heavy formality. A lot of these other groups don't, and certainly a lot of the witches don't have any heavy formality. They don't even cast circles.
Wow.
You know, some of them. You know, so the question is, we get most of ours from high magic. How much of this is necessity, and how much of it is window dressing? We're going to need more and more people to experiment and see how much it takes to make it work, and how much we can get rid of.
Yeah.
I mean, with magic, the simpler it is, the better it is, in my opinion.
Sometimes we make it too complex.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when it gets complex enough, you can't quite remember what you're supposed to be doing next. It's too complex.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I agree.
I'd like to see people get to the point where, you know, it's just instinctual. You know, you've got a problem that comes up, just you instantly know what to do. You know, I'm one, I don't cast a lot of circles because in my mind, you know, my aura field is my circle. So, you know.
Well, I had a spell that I cast, and then I noticed things didn't seem to be going the way I wanted, and I just remembered the chant I used in the spell, and I'd do it two or three times each day, and the results improved.
Mm-hmm.
Not going
through
the full ceremony, just remembering what it was that I was focusing on.
Yeah.
You know, that's a lot of the problem in magic is lack of focus.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you have to be able to let go of the excess energy so you don't end up being a nervous wreck. As a bipolar person, I tend to be over-hyper anyway, so that's the last thing I need.
Well, yeah.
So what direction do you see Aaron going? I mean,
right now. We're in a quiet period right now.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, it's hard to maintain a civil rights group when there's no big danger showing up. So we're kind of in a dead period right now. But we're holding everything together so that when the next time things start getting rough, we'll be ready to act.
Hmm.
That's
the main thing is holding it together at this stage.
Yeah.
We just don't have too many people worried about civil rights when there's no immediate threat.
No, they don't.
You've seen a lot of pagan civil rights groups come and go for just that reason.
Mm-hmm.
So at this stage, we're sort of in a holding pattern so that we can be ready for when it gets lively again. Because the one thing you learn about life is everything in nature, including mankind, moves and ebbs and flows. Nothing stays the same. So this group wins this time, but then conditions change, and that group suddenly becomes the ones with the power. And then conditions change again, and still another group. And you have to know how to function when those changes take place. You function differently when you're in an ebb period where you're just trying to hold on to what you got and at the same time, you function quite differently when you're in a flow period, when you try to advance as fast as you can, to gain as much as you can. And you, if you do the wrong thing at the wrong time, you just end up wasting energy.
Yeah.
So we keep our networks open. We keep in touch with people. I keep in touch with quite a few people through the magazine. And then as things will liven up, and they're bound to do so again, look at the religious right. How many times has the religious right come up, died out, and come back again?
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, they're quiet.
Away. They're very dedicated.
Mm-hmm.
And so, therefore, if we want our things to happen, we have to be just as dedicated, and we have to think like they do on the long term. They continue doing what they do, even when things are going completely against them, because they figure at some point it will turn and go in their direction. We need to do the same thing. So does every other group.
You know, a thought occurred to me on that, you know, and a lot of pagans don't like the idea of organized religion.
Oh,
and,
I know. They're afraid that they're going to be under the great leader. I can understand that. But at the same time, we could use learning how to cooperate.
Yes,
during the frontier times, nobody survived on their own. This person's a good blacksmith. That person grows food well. That person's a good hunter. And by trading back and forth, they all survive.
We need to develop
that same kind of cooperation, even with people that we disagree with completely.
Yeah, what I'm getting at is, I used to be one of those fundamentalist Christians, and actually I used to sing with a gospel group, and through my singing, I funded a lot of missionaries that went to places like South Africa. And, of course, I regret that with every fiber of my being.
Oh, don't worry.
But
it can't be near as bad as the Marines that I converted to Buddhism. And back in those days, you had four religious choices in the Marine Corps, at least in boot camp. You could be a Catholic, Protestant, Jewish, or a troublemaker who did work details on Sunday. Can you imagine the first time they opened up one of those lockers and found a butsudan in there with a scroll on it? What is this, Marine?
Yeah.
And I converted several, so yeah, I think this is probably one of the reasons why it took so many years for me to end up becoming a Wiccan. I think I was still paying for it.
I would, though, like to see, pagans, no matter what tradition they follow, you know, come to a point where, you know, one day we could actually send missionaries out. And don't get me wrong by the, you know, when I say missionaries, but sort of a people that go out and set people free for real, because, you know, a lot of what Christianity does overseas, they're talking, you know, with their doctrine of,
well,
you know, we've come to set you free.
All we have to do is have the information out there. There's people
right.
who would like to be with us. They just need to have the information. They don't really need to be brought in. If we've got to bring them in, if we've got to convert them, they're going to be very weak.
No, I'm not talking about conversion.
Yeah. But if they're interested and we can get the information out there, then the seekers will find us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
yeah.
what we want, just to get the information out there.
Ah, well, there's our music, and that means that we're getting towards the end of our show, so we're going to need to wind up. And
okay.
Christopher, where can we find you and Aaron and Action on the Internet?
Okay, you can look up Aaron on the Internet and Google Aaron or Google Alternate Religion Educational Network. The URL there is aaron.org/about.
Okay.
And then for the newsletter, which is free, anybody who wants to read it can read it for free, and that can be done at again the same http://aaron.org/newsletter/index.php, and there you'll find the page for Action, and there are two buttons in the upper right corner. One is pre-211 and one is 211 and on, because we changed the way our layout went. Before 211, you had to send in an email to get the PDF copy, or you could read it online. Now you can from 211 on, we have a page turning one where you can copy it directly offline. You don't have to send an email or anything.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Christopher, for being on our show.
You're listening to
Aaron
Martin.
And it was just
Radio,
delightful.
Your source for the alternative viewpoint to the news around you. In between the amazing shows here, I invite you to check out Rocked Soul Radio, the latest source for alternative music and metaphysical talk on the web. Click over to RockedSoulRadio.com or find us on
the
Live 365 mobile app by searching Rocked Soul Radio. That's Rocked, R-O-C-K-D, Soul Radio.